This is an Enterprise Time Security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Mark Walmsley from Freshfields.
Hello, so it's Mark Walmsley from Freshfields. Freshfields are a global law firm. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer responsible for information and cybersecurity across our entire business.
If we look around the cybersecurity industry, we are so short of people, it's embarrassing at times. How do we begin to fix that and inspire the next generation of people?
There's two things. We are definitely short of people. We've got to invest in the next generation, but much younger. The 12-year-olds, the 14-year-olds, the 16-year-olds who understand technology, are starting to crack technology. We need to show them that there is a way and a career out there, and it's very diverse, and show them how to get into it and focus the ambitions of those individuals and their skill sets. And then that goes all the way through. So there's also the next generation is not just about the young people, but it's about people who are deciding they want a different career. We don't have to go and recruit people from IT. We recruit people from police force. We interviewed someone who was a gym instructor. It's a really diverse world. You can come into it and learn it at any time. We don't just have to go to one pool of people and just say, you're the only people we're going to select from.
But how do we get them to stay with it? It's very easy to walk in on a careers day for people who are 10, 12, 14 and say, these are the careers out there. The problem for many of them when they get to 15, 16, when they've got to make more serious decisions, is that they're not necessarily sure where they want to go at that point in time. Also, many careers put a lot of inhibitors in place in terms of requirements of education and university degree. How do we overcome that?
I've got a really explicit view about this, and actually, technical training doesn't really help you. It's all about doing it on the job. Apprenticeships are fabulous because you get to go in and understand exactly how to do it. It's a little bit like going to law school. So you learn the books and then you turn up in a law firm and you go, this isn't how it works in practice. There are a lot more complexities here. I've got to think in a much more agile way. And so you've got the piece of paper, but actually that's when you learn to do your job. Exactly the same in cybersecurity and information security. You have people come in and they start to say, well, I really get it now. I understand what the job entails. They don't have to go to university. They don't have to do specific A-levels. They just have to have an ambition to learn and be pragmatic and be driven. And then the rest can just be learned on the job, because it isn't one of those things that's repeatable. You're constantly doing something new. You're constantly finding a new pressure. And when you're in that kind of world, you learn incredibly quickly.
But how do we break down the geek part? Because there's an assumption that cybersecurity equals geek, coding, playing with computers. When in reality, it's hugely diverse. We have the legal side, where many of the lawyers and solicitors and counsel who are dealing with this have no clue, often, about what the actual subject is. We look around, we have people who understand psychology who need to come in so that we can start to do better in defeating social engineering attacks. How do we make people aware of how wide the opportunity is?
But if you get them in young enough, you can spread them across all of the areas. So the apprenticeships, it's a bit like lawyers, so I'll go back a bit. Trainees in a law firm will typically do four seats. They'll go to four different departments, learning four different sets of skills and how you deal with your clients in different industries. And at the end, you'll choose the one that you think best suits you and your skill set. We should be doing that with the next generation. So we're saying, learn a bit about training. This is what you do. You might want to be an analyst. So you might want to look in a SOC and the alerts that are coming through. You might want to be someone who looks at risk profiles. So you're educating the business on acceptable risks and what your clients are expecting. But the young people can come in and they can look over your shoulder and get involved in that work with very little risk, actually, to the business. And at the end of it, there will naturally be an area that they are keen to do. And in our environment, we've got a very diverse team at Freshfields, but everyone has stretch areas. So they have a core focus, which is whatever they chose, and then they'll have stretch areas. So they'll end up in a place where they'll do someone else's job at the same time to learn from them. So you've got our technical team up in Manchester are involved in client audits. So they're actually speaking to clients, they're providing evidence, they're understanding the requirements, but they're the SOC team, they're the people who look at the threats that are coming through. And now we're starting to see that generation, those particular staff saying, I really want to do a bit more in this arena as well as my normal job. So we take that model and we apply it to the next generation. Suddenly they'll naturally see what's available and they'll want to be in it, because it's not like being an accountant or being a lawyer, which is one directional. It's very, very diverse, and you can swap pretty quickly.
What I liked on your first answer was you talked about vocational training. Vocational training means you don't come out with a huge amount of debt. It means you can actually learn skills on the job, you can change skills. But it also then appeals to those people in school who perhaps aren't doing well academically, and it says to them, there's something for you rather than being thrown away. Because we are a society that tends to throw people away if they don't have the bits of paper we expect. How hard is it to reach out to those people in that scenario?
I think really difficult, and maybe sometimes people say it's in the too difficult to do bucket, but it's actually not. You just have to go and try. And there are plenty of places. There's lots of underprivileged schools and communities out there. They just need to be touched because they have got no clue about what this side of the world looks like. But there are initiatives. There's some government initiatives on the moment to reduce the debt. A new initiative is 250 university students from all over the country are being funded by the UK government. They get a bursary, but they get trained by the government to government level standards, and they will spend 8 weeks, so their entire summer, in a UK business. And the idea behind that is they reduce the debt, they get exposure to different businesses, so penetration testers, law firms, accountancy firms, a whole range of things. So it's only 250 people, but it's a start. So something is happening in that arena. Now, those individuals aren't people that are coming from Oxford or Cambridge, but they are tested, so they're psychometrically tested. Do you have good rational reasoning? Are you able to? Do you have the passion? Do you really want to be in this environment? And that will start to bleed into other areas. Once it's got some traction, we then start to go back and say, right, where else are we going to do this? But I do it at school. My children are 4 and 6, and my colleagues do it as well. We go and speak to parents, and we go and speak to children about safe internet. What does the future look like? And suddenly we're getting that little bit of ambition there, and wow, this is pretty cool. And they get it. Like I said, my 4-year-old and 6-year-old know my job better than my wife. They know my job, they can explain my job, and they're interested in it. Our 6-year-old is now coding. So he's learning how to code, and when you start to get into learning how to code, the next thing is, once you understand it, then you understand how it works, then you understand how you can break it or make it better, you're now into the security world of doing things. Mm-hmm. And so we can use that passion, ambition, in a way of just getting people interested.
You mentioned just there the issue of going into underprivileged schools and talking with them. As a company, you do a degree of that.
We do. We, if you like, sponsor a underprivileged school in London. We'll go in, we'll read with the children, we'll go on events. They'll come into our London office, they'll see what a corporate environment looks like. They'll meet a whole range of roles and people. We'll give them some tasks, understanding how to present to a particular community. So it might be a bunch of partners on a particular idea, how to analyse issues, how to make decisions collectively, how to drive change collectively, things that you just don't learn in schools. But these are 12, 14, 16-year-olds that are getting exposure to a different world. We've been doing it for a few years. The feedback is astronomical. If we were to look back and see if that's making a difference to the school and where people go, because we'll also help on choosing GCSEs, if they go into A-levels, we'll help there, we'll help focus careers, we might write mission statements for them, personal statements for them. We are seeing a change. The school is operating in a different way now, with good support, good leadership from a really famous law firm.
So that gap between vocational education and then bringing people through becomes naturally an apprenticeship.
Exactly.
What are you doing around that, and what do we need to do around that?
There are a couple of apprenticeship schemes that are out there at the moment, both of them government funded. We're getting involved in both of them. But the other thing is, our staff are asking whether their children can come in or their friends' children can come in. One of the executive assistants sent me an email who said, I've got a stepson or a family friend who's 14 or 15 years old, would like to come and do some work experience during summer in your area. He's really into cybersecurity. His dad runs an IT business. He just wants to understand what it looks like. Do you think we can do it? Of course we can do it. HR might have some questions, but if the ambition is there, we'll just press the button. How much damage can an individual cause when they're supervised? And if they leave saying Freshfields is a great place to work, and they've learnt something, and they go and talk to a couple of their friends, it's like Pass It On. Wasn't there that film Pass It On? Pass It Forward. Then we start to drive that organic behaviour and interest, and we start to get some real traction.
Are you a CISO? So you have to recruit these people. How challenging is your recruitment at the moment?
We've got a good reputation. We have a lot of people internally who want to come and join our teams. So that's good, from a very diverse background, including lawyers. It is difficult to find really good people, and you can't hire in your own vein. So this is something I'm really explicit about. Freshfields do not want 20 Mark Walmsleys in their business, because we'll have one view of the world, and it'll be my view, and we'll all be doing what I say. And you need to be challenged, because mindsets are different, personality types are different, vision is different. You have to have that. That narrows down our pool of people. We recruit through day rate contractors. We've actually got 4 young people in our team who are day rate contractors, but we'll keep them on. So they'll become permanent members of staff for us. And they are early 20s, and they haven't studied cybersecurity. They're just smart people. They want to get going in life. So we'll keep those. But the market is short. It's really short. But we don't have to have people with experience. You train people when they come on board. But keeping them is difficult. A, you have to treat them as human beings. And you have to give them a voice. And you have to respect the decisions that they want to make. Second thing is you have to give them diversity. Third thing is you have to make it not about money. Because there is so much money being ploughed into cybersecurity professionals now. Within 6 months of a job, they can walk for another 10, 15, 20, 30,000 pounds. So you have to make it more than that. They've got to love the job and get paid well enough for what's expected of them. But you can't make it about the money. Otherwise, all they'll be doing is just chasing the cash for the rest of their lives.
What happens then about the knowledge? Because, of course, that first 6 months in any job is learning the company, learning the job. How hard is your retention problem? Are you running at sort of at 80% retention, 90%?
So we have lost over 5 years, 4 members of staff. So we've got a good retention period. Those staff have gone off to bigger jobs and they've gone with our blessing because we are generating really good information security professionals that will then go and do a bigger job somewhere else. It's not they don't like our organisation, they just have an opportunity to be somewhere else. We'll always have that risk, quite frankly. The team is fabulous. And so they are all moving up. We air gap everyone. By that I mean that we make available to everyone a space above them that they can work into. And so they work into that group and that space and they'll either stay with us or they would have learnt to become a senior manager or a head of and they'll go somewhere else. And we just have to make sure that we've got a pipeline of people coming through to us.
How difficult is it for other people to start to take this model on? Because if I look around, this is a very different model to so many of the companies I talk with.
I don't think it's difficult. It's not rocket science. You're saying we need to have a pipeline of talent and we need to invest in them. And then when you look at it, you go, right, I've got universities I can go and speak to. I've got young schools. These are all slightly different age groups by 4 or 5 years. You've got people who would like career changes or people who are doing skill sets that are really helpful. So people with project management background, really helpful. People from HR background, GDPR and privacy background, super, super helpful. You've got people who have worked in the police force, amazing for investigations because they're very methodic about how they will look at the problem. And once you do it and you put it on a piece of paper, it's really not difficult. I mean, I'm not trying to undersell it. It's then about just pulling the trigger and going and having the conversation. But once it starts happening, you're on the roller coaster.
How easy was it for you initially to sell this to your senior partners?
Yeah, pretty easy, actually. They get it at the organisation. They're bought into it. It's all about risk. Law firms are all about risk. We're investing in what we're doing and the partners are 100% behind it. But it's almost like I don't have to ask permission. Because I've been the CISO for 5 years, we've made good decisions along the way. And therefore, there is a good element of trust there. We run other schemes that are not to do with cybersecurity whatsoever. We were talking earlier about the Martin Lawrence Foundation and what it looks like from that perspective. They come into Freshfields, they'll meet lawyers, they'll meet people that work in IT, Reaper Graphics. So it's just another investment portfolio into community. So Freshfields are not getting anything out of that. And that's the same for us. Where we see an opportunity to, if you like, improve outside of Freshfields, we'll do that.
It'd be nice to think a lot of companies are going to spend more time investing in community.
Well, I think you have to. Less people are going to universities now because it's so expensive. More people are finding it difficult to get into roles, etc., because they're so diverse now. If we don't go into the communities and we don't explain to people there is an opportunity there in all sorts of ways, then we are not standing by what we believe in. We just can't be. So I spend a lot of time trying to support my mum in phishing attacks. If you take that concept and you apply it to young people, unless you tell them it's there, you can't expect them to go and work it out for themselves and then chastise them because they haven't worked it out. You have to go and say, let me educate you. Let me explain to you what it looks like. Now I've got your level of interest. Now we're jointly responsible for it going forward.
There was a piece in the BBC about how do we stop being so stupid about cyber. And you've kind of answered that. It's a shame when I look around the industry as a whole, I don't hear that level of commitment to solution.
It's interesting. On a panel session yesterday, we talked about insider threat. And a lot of it was about technology. I actually said, technology is the last point in any kind of protection. The first point is about people. People process tech. We've got to explain to people what we expect them to do, and we've got to say it in a way that's really plain and simple. And then once they've got it, then you can say, right, now I've got an obligation and you've got an obligation. I've set what the risk is, how we do things. You now understand it. We're jointly responsible for making sure that happens. And it's a little bit the same here. So we've got to explain to people what the opportunity looks like. So my previous assistant, she's now part of the team. She doesn't provide any support to me. She's one of the investigators in the insider threat detection team. And she was a former police officer. But she got into it because She was managing my mailbox. She was coming to meetings. A little bit like Lisa here today. I wanted to meet as many people as possible and understand what the opportunities might look like in the future. In that particular case, Fran has now become part of the team. She's now a security professional. She's learning her tradecraft, if you like. But that's just because she had exposure. If we do it outside of that formal relationship and we're actually just saying, guess what, there are other things that you can do, we're naturally going to get some interest.
Do you think part of this is laziness? It's easy to look at tech and say we have solutions to deal with tech. It's so much harder to look at people.
I think it's really hard to look at people. Interesting, last night, one of the suppliers said, I've never met a CISO like you. You think in a very different way and you think about people before technology. If you take that and you take that concept and you apply it to your workforce and how you actually recruit, you start to say, I'm looking at the people first and then I'll work out where they go into the business and what they do. I just want the right DNA and don't care about the background. And diversity is really important, but actually it's the DNA of the person. And then you just say, great, I've got them. Now we can give them the opportunity.
Sounds like it's a fun place to work for you.
Crazy place to work. Every day is very different. Hundreds and hundreds of things happening all the time. The schedule goes out the window first thing in the morning. We work incredibly hard, but we have a fabulous team. We get the best engagement scores pretty much every year in the organisation. We go out as a team. We've got a real vibe going. So we had our strategy away days. We've got a real vibe going in the team. Everyone is just pulling in the same direction and is energised. And that is just because we are supporting one another in the right way. And so, yeah, it is a fun place to work. It has stresses, as does everything. In a different way, we operate very differently to other businesses. We allow flexibility. Mandatory to work from home one day a week without question. You get to see your family. You get to go and do the things in the evening that you want to do. That's when I said can't chase the cash. It's that work-life balance. One of the contractors that works for us, a guy called Zaki, he's fabulous, and Will is fabulous as well, who is his boss. And Zaki says, I actually love my job. And how many times does someone say, I really, really love my job. I love coming to work. I love working with you guys. I really enjoy it and I'm really inspired and I'm learning all the time. And he's the kind of guy that you say to him, can we have a chat tomorrow morning about this thing? Sure, Mark, I'm going to read it up tonight. So you don't have to, it's 10 o'clock. No, I'm really interested in it. And you get an email at 1 o'clock in the morning saying, I've read it and this is what I think we should do. Awesome. I'll get the coffees. Let's go for it. Now, that's just pure passion. And you get that from kids. You get that level of passion from kids. If they're watching a TV program they love, they'll just sit there watching it for hours and hours and hours because they're addicted. The same thing you can do in cybersecurity. Just got to show them how exciting it can be and then just channel it going forward.
I wish we see more people inspire people for the next generation. Mark, thank you for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks very much.